Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli. We have Larry and also Tommy calling in from Virginia on the line. But before we entertain him, IQ, first of all, I want to thank you for staying over. IQ, I think we agree on almost everything, even in this modest disagreement. And I would like to explain why I think we end up agreeing on most everything, except for a very unique perspective that is unique to those who are Torah observant. Islam was not inspired by any god. The Quran is nothing but Muhammad's personal rantings to satiate his lust for sex, power, and money. Allah is Muhammad's pet rock. Allah is not God. There is no divine sanction of any kind for Islam. And therefore, by the way that many people would hear the word religion, by that standard, Islam is not a religion. Now, I want to change the perspective ever so slightly for you. It is a myth that is as debilitating as many in the world today, that God somehow inspired religions and that religions are godly. None of them are. Rabbi Akiva, who conceived Judaism, was a scumbag. He had no association with God at all. Paul, who conceived the religion of Christianity, was a scumbag. He had no association, no understanding, no knowledge of God at all. And so the religions, and you'd look at Buddha and Buddhism, he didn't even try to create a religion. He was trying to help people who were the victims of religion. And so when you realize that really all religions are rotten to the core, and that God goes out of his way in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms to despise religions, telling us all of the negative consequence of religions, telling us that if we want to have a relationship and we have to leave religions. From that point of view, all of these various man-made schemes are religions, and they're all non-inspired, and they're all in conflict with God. The difference is, to your point, is that Islam is unique among them, and that it was founded by the most repulsive man who ever lived, by a man who was a pedophile, a rapist, a mass murderer, a ruthless terrorist, a slave trader, and a kidnapper. And that it is so utterly vile, so violent, so deadly, such a horrible cancer, that to identify Islam with any of these other religions is to give Islam credibility that it does not observe, does not deserve. Is that a reasonable summation?
Whatever you said now, it's perfectly correct. I want you to understand something. I will not sit in judgment of people, whether they are Christian or Jews or Muslims. They want to believe whatever they want to believe, fine. I have no problem with it. They believe in a God who revealed it. I have no problem with this. But I have a problem. When a pedophile called Muhammad says that his God, Allah, is the same as the God of Jesus, Moses, and Abraham, I have a very serious problem.
Yes.
Because
it's not true.
Allah
That's right.
is not God.
Right. That is
Allah
true.
Is Muhammad.
Yes.
That's why Allah is as depraved as Muhammad in his Quran.
Yeah. We agree completely that
completely.
That Muhammad created his religion in such a way that that since he was so inept, the only way that he'd give it a religious spin was to try to slather his religion with some context to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and to what he calls the Injil or Gospels. And so he said that his God was the same as that God, and that he was in the long line of Jewish prophets.
And that's where I go crazy.
Right, and that is, and you and I are in, and in fact, anybody who is informed and rational will go similarly crazy, because there is no correlation whatsoever between the Abraham that's presented in the Torah, and the covenant that's presented in the Torah, and the God named Yahweh who is presented in the Torah, and anything you read in the Quran. They are the antithesis of each other.
Absolutely.
Right.
That's exactly the point. It is. I have no problem with Muslims believing in whatever they want to believe. All I want is they believe, stay in your country, don't come to our country.
Yeah. Now, we're in agreement here. I don't care what people believe. You can believe anything you want. You want to be a Muslim? Go squander your life. You want to be a Christian? Go waste your soul. You want to be a rabbinic Jew? That's your call. I don't care. I don't care what you choose to believe. What I care about is when people start lying on behalf of their religion and convincing others of those lies, and that's what you're fighting here, too. I care when the Christian advances Paul's rhetoric because Paul's rhetoric leads people astray. I care when the Muslim or the Muslim advocate speaks on behalf of Islam, calling it a Abrahamic religion, because that is a complete lie. So we are, I think, in wholesale agreement on this. It's just that the realization that Islam makes claims relative to its association with the religions of Judaism and Christianity that are absolutely laughable.
Agreed. So we have no discrepancy now.
Right.
We have no disagreement whatsoever.
All right. Can you entertain a call from Tommy? He's calling in from Virginia. Then we have Glenn in Philadelphia, and I'd like to get back to Larry. Tommy has a comment on the disagreement, at least what he thought was a disagreement between us. I don't think there is a disagreement between us, actually, but go ahead, Tommy.
No, dear.
Yeah.
There's a connection being missed, I think, that IQ's missing. And, but he's willing to expose and condemn Islam, but he's not recognizing the characteristics that are... they parallel with Paul, so
right.
I would say that Allah and Jesus could be one and the same because they both, it's kind of like seeing characteristics in your family. You can see characteristic traits. You know, my son looks like me. Mm-hmm. And when you see Hassatan or Halal bin Shakar pulling his religious card, every time, you know, you see similar characteristics, like Muhammad got his revelation from a flashing light in a cave, and
yes.
You know, and Paul also, you know, made his claim that he saw a flash of light in the desert, and he's got this great revelation, and you see the fruit of that
right.
in society today. And Christians are, you know, ravaging the earth; they're destroying it, and you know, of course, Islam is right up there, you know, right behind
yeah.
them, you know.
Right.
And
right. Obviously, Tommy. Yeah, thank you for the comment. And I'm going to agree with you up to a point. And that point is I'm going to agree with you about 99% of what he said. And what he said, IQ, is really irrelevant to our discussion in a way. Paul's writings are remarkably similar in many ways to Muhammad's writings, where Paul claimed the credibility, his credibility based upon the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and then twisted and bastardized them so that he could then state his own mantra. The difference is that Paul, while he was anti-Semitic, was not nearly as vicious about it as was Muhammad. But Pauline Christianity bears a lot of similarities with Islam. That said, the place I would disagree is that even the Pauline Jesus isn't similar to Muhammad's Allah. Paul was unable to corrupt his Jesus to the point that he would resemble Allah. Allah is just an absolute perfect caricature for Satan. If you look at every satanic characteristic that is presented in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, they are manifest in Muhammad's Allah. But I feel one of the things that this brought up, and I want to be, because we really don't have a disagreement here, but I want to be very fair with you on this. I love your single focus, which is your focus is to expose and condemn Islam. You're the best in the world at it. And everything you say about Islam, based upon the research I've done, is precisely accurate. The only difference between us is I've gone on. Well, I still do this because it's an essential part of our survival as a people, as a world, to expose and condemn Islam. I've gone on to also expose and condemn other religions because they are also leading people astray. And so I have spent another 15,000 hours, if you will, going on to expose and condemn the Christian religion, the Jewish religion, and socialist secular humanism because they're all corrupting humankind and causing mankind to do hideous things. So that's really the only difference, is that I'm not just a Islam basher. And Islam deserves all the bashing we could possibly do, and it's our interest to do it. But I'm also a critic of Christianity, Judaism, and socialist secular humanism. Fair enough?
Fair enough. But yep. Really, I wanted to ask Tom, I think it was.
Uh-huh. Yes.
You cannot find anywhere in the Pauline doctrine a single verse that incites the followers of Paul or Jesus to exterminate all those who do not believe in Jesus. You won't find a single verse like that.
Yeah, but
Quran,
yes, that's true.
I can give you 19 A4 pages full of verses telling you to exterminate those who do not believe in Muhammad and Allah.
Yeah, Paul was wrote with extraordinary hostility. And his hostility was almost universally directed at anyone who disagreed with him, or, and particularly, towards Jews. He was extraordinarily condemning of Yahusha's disciples. He never spoke to the followers of Yahusha. He was not a follower of Yahusha himself. Paul created his own religion. Paul encouraged violence against those who did not accept Pauline doctrine, but Paul's incitement of violence was 1/1000th as repetitive or as vicious as was Muhammad's. And yeah, so you get right back to
Muhammad are practically infinite.
Yes, you're getting right back to your point. Is it's unfair to compare Islam to Christianity? That even though both religions are wrong and that Paul was a very evil man, the fact of the matter is that Islam is so infinitely worse in terms of its demonic nature, its deadly nature, that it's unfair to compare Islam to Christianity, because Islam is infinitely worse in, if you value people's lives, if you value freedom, if you value prosperity, if you value free speech, no matter what it is that you might value that would be considered good, Islam is far worse at attacking and destroying them. Would that be your view as well?
Perfect.
All right. We'll have a comment from Glenn and from Larry when we return to Shattering Myths with IQ, Al Rasooli. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we turn to Glenn and then Larry in their comments to IQ, Al Rasooli. IQ, I want to backtrack just a bit and to speak of how we got into this discussion. The reason it's important to understand what Islam is and what Islam is not is because the world continues to intervene in the Islamic world. And your last comment, based upon a note that somebody had written to the Washington Post, is saying, which is that since people ought to be able to believe whatever they want to believe, let Muslims, under Sharia law, continue to do whatever they wish to one another. If they want to kill one another, that's not our affair. Let them do so. But just don't allow Muslims outside these Islamic countries, don't let them immigrate and infiltrate into free societies, because they'll bring this disease into your society. So you're actually viewing Islam as if it were a contagious disease that once caught is deadly. And so you're saying quarantine.
With all due respect, the most virulent virus has ever penetrated the human consciousness called Quran.
Yes. Yeah, Quran.
I don't have to add to it. I don't have to even be a genius about it.
Yeah.
It is the most deadly virus. It must not be allowed to take root in our Western societies, in our democracies, because it will destroy us from within, plus destroying us from without.
Yeah, I would. Up to a point, I would agree with you. The point is that Islam should be equated to a deadly virus, and that as a deadly virus, if we allow Muslims to immigrate and live in Western societies, they will spread the disease, and we will end up all dying from it. The only place I disagree is that if you look at the long history of Christianity, particularly when the cleric and king were unified throughout Europe, Christianity was extraordinarily deadly. And if you look at the last 100 years and you discount Islam's beginning, where they killed several hundred million people in the first 100 years of Islam's reign, socialist secular humanism, communism, socialism, fascism have been extraordinarily deadly, the religion of man, in the last 100 years. So Islam does not stand alone. But a good argument could be made that in today's world, the single most dangerous pathogen is Islam. That said, we have Glenn. He's spoken to you before, IQ. He has a comment on this discussion. Hello, Glenn. Welcome. Sorry for having you on hold so long.
I think we have music. I hear music. Do I hear music? No?
No. Okay. No. Go ahead.
Okay. Good. Good. Good morning, IQ. Good morning, Yana. As fascinating as it's been listening to you guys quibble over how many angels can dance on the head of an English semantic distinction, this isn't the first time this question has appeared in his ugly head and consumed much of an hour of the program. I would think you guys please consider resolving this issue off air so you're not going to find yourself talking at cross purposes on this one.
Okay. Thank you, Glenn. The issue that Glenn is saying is that the dispute on the meaning of a word isn't worthy of airtime. I actually think it is. I think that the more people understand the commonality and the differential between religion and the distinctions between Islam and other religions, the more helpful it is in terms of understanding why we've made a bigger mess in the Islamic world. What do you think, IQ?
I agree. He's wrong. Words are the most powerful weapons in the human intellectual arsenal. And words have a meaning. And when somebody perverts the meaning of the word to suit their purposes, we have to bring it to the attention of the people that this person is perverting the meaning of the word.
Correct.
Like when they say, Islam means peace. Islam never meant peace. Islam is rooted in aslama, which means submission. So it is our job to tell 99% of humanity who are totally ignorant that you are being deceived. No, he's wrong.
Yeah. And
you are
yeah,
right.
By the way,
and
yeah.
Right. Words
yeah.
are
all,
extremely
right.
important.
Yeah. And the defense of Glenn, Glenn's is an expert in words. He wields them normally with great precision, and the last some 20 calls that Glenn has made to this program have really been outstanding in terms of their contribution. But here I agree with you that understanding what words mean and using them correctly is the single most effective tool that we have to combat the disease that is in it, that is Islam. It is the antidote to Islam. It is the essence of the cure to the Islamic threat is words wielded wisely. And Glenn happens to be an advocate of doing that. But in this particular case, it is important to know what religion means and how Islam differs from other religions and where it is common with other religions and why we ought not buy into that all religions are the same and that they all promote good. Islam is an extraordinarily poisonous disease. We'll be back with Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a discussion as to why it was impossible for us to prevail in our invasion of Iraq and that by invading Iraq, the U.S. made the world a much unsafer place. This comment, IQ, and we also have Larry on the line, was written by a fellow named Sid Chadden of Palermo, California. He was writing it in the chat room associated with the Washington Post article about giving more weapons to the Iraqi regime. He wrote, "The killing in Iraq is done pursuant to the Islamic doctrine of death to infidels. Academic and theologians contend that the doctrine exempts people of the book, i.e. Christians and Jews. But prominent Muslim scholars have made it clear in their fatwas that infidels means non-believers in Islam. Sunnis and Shia, the two major branches of Islam, consider each other to be infidels. And they have been killing each other for centuries for that reason. The killing continues to this day in Pakistan, Yemen, Iraq, Libya, Egypt, Mali, Sudan, Nigeria, Lebanon, and Syria. Diplomacy cannot stop it because it's a religious tenet. War can't stop it because of the vast populations of Muslims that reside in so many different countries. Western leaders continue to recite that Islam is a religion of love, of peace, and that terrorism is the work of a tiny minority, but that won't stop the killing either. The Sunnis and Shia are hardly a tiny minority, and the doctrines of death to the infidels is hardly a message of love or peace. What do you think, IQ?
Well, he's right. But he didn't know, for example, for those people who do not know the Quran, that the Quran was allegedly revealed to Muhammad through two different periods, mm-hmm. the Mecca period and the Medina period.
Correct.
The Mecca period was conciliatory. The Medina period was hate-mongering, war-mongering, misogynist. Mm-hmm. In fact, chapter 9 at Tawbah, verse 5, the fighting verse, according to Islamic jurisprudence, abrogated, made null and void, overturned 124 earlier verses of the Mecca period, which were conciliatory.
Right.
Jews and Christians, Ahl al-Kitab, were good in the Mecca period, became the enemies of Islam in the Medina period. Full stop.
Yeah, it's actually the second surah, which was the first surah revealed in Medina, Yathrib, during its day, that began to change the enemy. And the reason that it changed the enemy is that Muhammad, when he was in Mecca, was such a backwater town, a mud hut village. He had some distant associations with Christians and Jews, and they were helpful in providing some credence to his religious mantra. But when he fled Mecca in shame and ended up in Yathrib, today's Medina, the only people prosperous there were the three Jewish communities, and for him to survive as a thug, he plundered them. And so he redefined his religion in the second surah redefined the enemy as being Jews. And for the next 9 of 10 years, he devoted all of his capability to having his militants bludgeon Jews so that they could rob them, kill the men, enslave the children, and rape the women. And so that was a profound transition in Islam. And as you say, because of abrogation, which occurred in the second surah, the second surah 2:106, it says specifically for this very reason that it's spoken kindly of Jews, somewhat kindly, in the Meccan period. Disregard all of that because they're now the enemy.
By the way, after the Jews, they exterminated the Christians of Arabia.
Well, see, that happened in the fifth surah. While the second surah was the first surah allegedly handed down in Yathrib, the fifth surah was the last. It's this Quran's last surah chronologically. And what happened then is that Muhammad had overhunted Jews. Every Jew within camel ride of Mecca and Medina had been assassinated. They either been assassinated or they had been enslaved. He had robbed them so that he had overhunted Jews, and there was no way to keep his thugs, his barbarians, satiated by continuing to hunt Jews. There were no more of them. Overhunted them, hunted them to extinction. And so what he did is he turned his rage against Christians, and he said, see, the Byzantines up there, they have money. They have loot that you can go rob. And so the fifth surah was designed to rename the enemy of Islam and Allah from Jews to now Christians. And so that's the transition.
Unfortunately, people don't know these things. I mean, I'm talking about people, I'm not talking about 99% of humanity, both Christian and Jews, don't know that.
Right. It's so simple. But it's so simple. You know, you look at once you put the Quran in chronological order, you recognize that Muhammad was at war with the Meccans, with his own brothers and sisters, when he lived in Mecca. The enemy in Mecca were always the Meccans, all right? And then Muhammad was shooed out of Mecca in shame following the satanic verses where he claimed to be inspired by Satan, and following the winged ass ride to Jerusalem to the non-existent temple, and he was just laughed out of town. And they said, come on, you're a menace to society. Get out of here. And he went to Yathrib, where the first meeting was with some Arabs there, and they decided that they would declare war against all humankind on behalf of Muhammad. He went there. The Jews did not receive him as their Messiah. And so he systematically changed the enemy from the Meccans to the Jews.
And then from the Jews to the Christians.
Right. When he, after he had robbed every and murdered every Jew within camel ride of Yathrib, today's Medina, he changed it to the Christians and began to attack the Byzantine Empire. And what's interesting in the final assault, where he abrogated each of these enemies previously, is that his followers, his barbarians, didn't want to go attack the Byzantines. He said, you know, there's a difference between killing Jews. They're defenseless. It's one thing to kill the Meccans and to rob them. They're defenseless. But the Byzantines, the Christians, they're not defenseless. They really have an army. And so we don't want to go off and wage jihad against them. We have never fought an army. We've never fought anyone other than civilians, acts of terrorism. We don't want to go fight them. So what did Allah allegedly say through Muhammad in the ninth surah about those Muslims who didn't want to go off and fight jihad against the Christians?
They are infidels to be killed.
Right. So a peaceful Muslim from that point on became an infidel, a hypocrite, that good jihadist Muslims had to kill.
That's why we have the Sunnis massacring the Shia because they consider them infidels.
Right.
And the Shia massacring the Sunnis because they consider them infidels.
So all you have to do...
My question to the listeners, who is a Muslim?
Well, let's what we've just revealed here is that if you take the time to set the Quran into the context of Muhammad's life and you put it in chronological order, then you understand everything that is happening and you know that there's no way to stop it. You go from ignorant to understanding, and understanding empowers making appropriate moral decisions. And you recognize everything America has done in the Islamic world has made a bad situation worse.
You know, it's remarkable that literally tens of thousands of Americans have died in the last 100 years, in fact 65 years, defending Muslims from other Muslims.
Yes.
Kosovo, Bosnia, Sudan,
right.
Iraq, Afghanistan,
right.
Pakistan.
Right.
You
Libya.
Name it. Libya, Libya. We have Lebanon. We have Syria.
Oh, yeah, Lebanon. Terrible.
You know, Americans in the tens of thousands died defending one group of Muslims against the predation of another group of Muslims. And for what?
For what?
There is not even an appreciation of what you have done.
Right.
You squandered the lives of your best men and women. And you wasted trillions of dollars for nothing. And this is a tragedy. It is for nothing. You haven't achieved anything.
Oh, I would argue.
Could I chime in here?
Yeah, please, Larry. Go ahead.
You know, I mean, this was brought back to the fact that, you know, we were talking about the British and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I would say this, and I'm going to try to tie all this in very quickly, but, you know, during World War II, the Jews that wanted to escape out of Germany tried to get into Russia, and of course everybody was told that the Jews controlled Russia, but they couldn't go into Russia. Stalin was a great Jew hater.
Right.
They tried to go to England, and Churchill would not allow any Jews to go to England.
He was out of
criminal
too.
FDR wouldn't allow any Jews to go to America, so they weren't allowed to escape. They were either killed or funneled down through Israel to be killed by the Mufti, who was working with Eichmann in the SS.
Correct.
Now, that brings me back to the West involvement, British, Vatican, American.
Right.
And it really is those three. Those are the three city-states.
Mm-hmm.
They all have obelisks in them, which are really made to in honor of Amun-Ra. People say Amen at the end of their religious prayers in honor of Amun-Ra.
Right.
And it was really, you know, Hitler took the three-fingered oath to the Vatican. He always wore the Maltese cross. That's the one thing he would always have on.
Mm-hmm.
And today, I have to ask myself, and this goes back to the point that IQ was just making, Why in the world is the West funding anything in Islam? Well, because it serves the purpose of the elite, which is to create war, create chaos, and then take over. I'll tell you who they'll get. They'll get the Iranians. They'll get the Iranians.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll get the Iranians for the reason that they have this, you know, this leader that's like a pope. And the pope cannot have anybody challenging his authority.
Right.
And that'll be the next one they go after.
Yeah, Dr. Lurie, I just want to say that the thing you've added here is the one place where I would respectfully disagree with what IQ said. And I agree with everything IQ said up to this point. It's not that Americans have died in vain accomplishing nothing. We made the situation much worse. We are the primary arms supplier to the Islamic world. When we're sending Hellfire missiles now to the Shiite government in Iraq, we're arming Iran. And so it's far worse, IQ, and I think you know this. It's far worse than, and I don't think you disagree, I don't think this is actually a disagreement between us. America sacrificed coin and blood, not in vain, but making a situation infinitely worse. We have provided the weapons that these Muslims are now using to kill us and one another. We'll be back with the last segment of the news hour of Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Please stay with us. I want IQ to respond and tell us whether or not he agrees that Americans' blood and coin has been spent not just in vain, but in actually in a suicidal fashion, making a bad situation worse, and we're continuing that. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I think Larry's comments at the end of the last hour brought this all full circle, suggesting that what America had done in Iraq, what America was doing throughout the Islamic world, was far worse than sacrificing money and blood in vain, but in fact deliberately making a bad situation worse. In other words, acting in a counterproductive and indeed suicidal fashion. Would you agree with that or challenge that, IQ?
I would not challenge that, no. It is suicidal. I've always said it was suicidal. There was no reason. There is no reason for the West to interfere in the internal affairs of the Muslims, even if they are exterminating each other to the last person.
Correct.
What's got to do with you?
Right. Well, plus the fact, how could we, as we have learned, we can't stop it. And not only can't we stop it, when America intervenes and provides weapons, the amount of terrorism that occurs, the amount of civilian casualties go up exponentially. All we've learned how to do is make it worse. We absolutely have learned that we cannot stop Muslim-on-Muslim carnage, and every time that we try, we make it vastly worse.
You know what I find repulsive? America spent tens of thousands of dead defending Muslims against Muslims, but they're not lifting a single finger in defending Christians who are being exterminated in my country, Iraq. They're being exterminated in Syria. They're being exterminated in North Africa. Not a single American.
Right.
IQ, can I bring something up here? I think that's intentional. See, I don't think that our leaders are stupid. I think they're evil and foolish. But I don't think that they're stupid.
Well,
I think
evil,
they know what they're doing. One of the things that
IQ, by the way, IQ agrees with you. He thinks our leaders are stupid and evil as well. And it is, but it does show hypocrisy, Larry, does it not? That we will sacrifice Americans to defend Muslims against Muslims, even though Muslims started this by bringing down our buildings with suicide bombers. But we will not sacrifice Americans to defend Christians against Muslims.
No, they won't. And one of the things that strikes me as particularly right out in front was the fact that we funded and established Al-Qaeda to begin with. That was a CIA op.
Right.
And secondly, what they did to turn Iran over to the mullahs, because Iran was progressing just beautifully until suddenly, the Shah said that he wasn't going to give oil to the West anymore. He was going to nationalize his oil. Yeah. And suddenly there was this Ayatollah Khomeini, who he wanted to put in exile within the country where they could watch him. But it was the French and the British and the Americans that made them allow Ayatollah Khomeini to establish and plan and everything his return and his coup and his revolution from France.
Yeah, but
now,
you
why
know,
was
even
that done?
But even
they
even
ran the Shah out of town, they flew him in as the conquering hero and then blamed it on the Iranian people. I'm not buying it.
Yeah. Yeah, and IQ, I think you would recognize that while that was a tragic mistake to turn Iran over to the Ayatollah and to fundamentalist Shia Muslims, at least Saddam Hussein was a buffer in Iraq against the onslaught of Shia Islam until America defeated Saddam Hussein and gave Iraq to Iran.
True. But unfortunately, I agree with the gentleman. They removed the Shah because of oil.
Yes.
Because the Shah was becoming too self-assured.
Yes.
And the West do not like a person who is self-assured, especially if they own oil and gas.
Yes.
So they overthrew him.
Right. But you know, we didn't overthrow the Saud regime, and they did the same thing. We didn't overthrow the Kuwaitis; they did the same thing. We didn't overthrow emirs in the United Arab Emirates, and they all did the same thing. It's interesting that we picked our battle.
They all work directly with the powers that be. They're funded by them. They love it.
Yeah.
You know, I see both religions here, and I do see the Vatican heavily involved. I'm sorry, you know,
yeah.
Reagan pointed out very clearly the Grace Commission report, not one dime, not a penny of what we pay in federal income tax goes to the people. And Karen Hootis, the recently deposed lead attorney for the World Bank, came out and said 60% of your federal income tax goes to the Vatican and 40% goes to the city in London.
Well,
now that should fire people up, and
that'll be a discussion and debate for another time. But thank you, and IQ Al-Rasouli, as always, and especially this time with so much of your time, we're greatly in your debt. We appreciate it, IQ Al-Rasouli.